Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us. It's evening here. It could be whenever or wherever, because so many people listen all over the world at different times through different streams, and that's really exciting. Thanks for being with us. So my guest tonight is Annette Rochelle Aben, and we're going to have a great time because she's a hoot. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing, which came out of my finding and posting an interesting tidbit about who is creating some of the information that's being used by climate change deniers. Way back when, talking about the 40s and 50s and 60s, the tobacco industry was under fire because people were starting to suspect that nicotine was addictive and it was connected to various diseases. And they hired some of the best propaganda specialists in the world to create a campaign to counter all of that. And they, besides doing things like lying to Congress and other things, they created educational, in quotation marks, organizations, and hired scientists to do scientific studies that came up with bogus data that said nicotine was not addictive. And of course, it was totally safe and healthy. And this went on, this game went on for decades, with them lying about how deadly cigarettes were and everybody else scrambling to try and counter the lies. Fast forward to 2014. Guess who is creating the science and the rhetoric behind much of the climate denial conversation? It's not just the same methodology, it's the same organizations and some of the same people doing the same propaganda, basically coming up with things that are not true, but seem like they might be, to confuse people so that the conversation is about what's called an argument, a red herring. And that metaphor comes from tracking with dogs. If you wanted to break the scent, you would put something smelly like a red herring across the trail, and they would get sidetracked because they would have this extremely strong smell and wouldn't be able to continue to follow the track. And that's exactly what they're doing. It's about creating a distraction that sounds true, that has the wonderful patina of looking and sounding and feeling like it's really science, but it's not true. So I had an interest. I posted that online and somebody came back with some things. And my point was, if the same people are using the same tactics that were used for tobacco, it tells me two things. One, the climate deniers are running scared, because otherwise they wouldn't put the amount of money and time and all the rest of it. And who are the climate deniers? It's basically big oil, because they're the ones that are making money now and they don't want to stop making money. But more than that, it says it's a confirmation that the real science is probably true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be creating phony science to counter it. So somebody who is far further to the right in his political views than I am started fussing over it, both in terms of what were the rhetorical techniques that were being used and, you know, blah, 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 blah. He had a different point of view. And that's fine. But what I said was, if it's the same liars that were doing that all the way back, when, what's going on is, number one, we know they're lying. Number two, we know that they're lying because they're trying to counter something else, which is true. And we know that they are totally willing for there to be collateral damage. People will die and they don't care. So one of the things, you know, who knows why the climate is changing, but it is changing. I have a colleague in Australia, and when we kicked this idea around, she said, look, there are small island nations in the South Pacific that are now underwater. And all the people who have lived on those islands with their own culture and their own way of life for thousands of years are now refugees in Australia. They have lost their world. At what point do we just look around and go, well, we may not know exactly what's going on, and there's a lot of people, a lot of politicians, and a lot of people with a lot of money arguing over this, but we better do something to save the people that live near the water, but to save all of us, because something's changing and you have to adapt to change. And adapting to change is what's created all the good stuff that human beings have ever done. And it's also what's kept us alive for a bazillion years, however many years human beings have been here. The number keeps changing as the scientists find more stuff. But adaptation, changing, looking at things and saying, oh, this is what's going on, I better figure out a way to deal with it, is the essence of what's powerful about being human. So when you run into people who are saying, no, don't bother with that, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain, that always sets up red flags for me. And I would suggest that when people are saying that kind of stuff to you, you kind of look at them askance and go, what's really going on? Because that's always the question. What's really going on? Why are you saying this? So again, maybe it's not metaphysical musing, more like a rant, but I hope it gave you something to think about and a different way to think about it. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to have some fun with Annette Rochelle Aben. Thanks so much for being on the show, Annette.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And we know each other from a totally different venue. You're one of the editors for The Magic Happens, which is an online magazine. And I know the founders of the magazine, and I've been writing for them for a ridiculous amount of time, like 8 years. But we never really connected until a phone call for the group involved in the magazine about a week ago. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Who is this? What does she do? You know what?
And I have that effect on people.
Right. Right. Exactly. Besides the fact that you're witty and a lot of fun to talk to, so we'll have a great time. But you're one of those people that has psychic skills, which you apply in several ways, and also this really wide range of technical background and very practical jobs that you haven't done superficially. You've done some really heavy duty stuff, which is very impressive. So what I ask everybody on the show is, how did you get here? How did you wind up doing what you're doing now? You know, what was the path? What was the walk about?
All right. I could borrow the line from Steve Martin and say I was born a poor black child, but if you've seen the movie The Jerk, you'll know I made that up. So, let me see. This is really crazy because prior to the show going on, you know, if people have never been your guest before, you're speaking with a fabulous engineer. Hello, Matt, our fabulous engineer, and David. And then everybody goes silent and David goes into his show. Well, the interesting thing is that the origins of the network that this show is on happen to be connected to the alma mater where I went to broadcasting school 30
right.
years ago. Now, this is even stranger. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan, where I went, was originally called the Lee Allen School of Broadcasting. And this so ties in with what you said, and you had no idea this was going to happen because you don't know this part about me. It was not included in that 400-page bio I sent you. And it's all
the,
right, 388.
The War and Peace bio.
You got the War and Peace bio.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, when we moved from Highland Park, Michigan, into Detroit just in time for the riots, we got settled in just before the troops got there. This is no
timing.
Joke.
Timing is everything.
Absolutely. The year after, my father was trying to decide what he wanted to do with his life and his family, get him out of Detroit or do whatever he wanted to do, and he was going to attend the Lee Allen School of Broadcast Arts, and Lee Allen himself came to the house to test my father for broadcasting school, and my dad's goal was to go to broadcasting school and move us all to Australia and live on and own a sheep farm while he did broadcast radio. And this is no joke. So when you say, where do my origins come from in all of this? I got to feel that somewhere along the line, there was some sort of psychic thread that pulled me in my late 20s to the broadcasting school owned originally by the guy that sat in our dining room talking to my dad all those years ago. And ta-da, ta-da. So my actual start in broadcasting came from my tour of duty at Spex Howard. However, back that up to 1983, when I had quit a job working at an international border crossing, Detroit and Windsor, where I processed government paperwork for 5 years for freight crossing the border. And I quit my job, and I was just all stressed out. And I'm living in this little resort town known as Gibraltar, Michigan. And I'm wandering through the IGA market with my groovy aviator shades on with the mirrored fronts that you couldn't see. And I was probably had an afternoon cocktail or something, and I'm just kind of scooting through. And this guy with this huge beta cam over his shoulder is like videotaping what I'm buying. And I looked at him. I said, "Who are you? And get away from me." And he said, "Oh, well, hi, I'm so-and-so. And see that building over there? That's a TV studio." And I said, "That's a bank." He said, "No, it used to be a bank. It's a TV studio now. Trust me." So the next day, I went over there, and inside was this crazy little closet-sized public access television studio. I fell in love. I took the class. I started writing really, really bad TV shows for public access, and everybody loved them. And I decided, oh, my gosh, I've been a writer since I was a little girl. Insipid, crazy poetry and wonderful essays for school. And gosh, I mean, I was published when I was 14. I mean, I was so excited about this. And my husband said to me, "You know, my grandfather just died and left us some money. Why don't I put you to broadcasting school?" I said, "Really? Seriously?" So I show up at Spex Howard and I take my entrance exam and they said, "Hey, Rhonda, radio." And I went, no, television. I don't want radio. Get radio out of here. I don't want radio. Well, blah, 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 blah. And the next thing I knew, I'm in the radio curriculum. TV was the last 4 weeks. I never got to do it because they were always yanking me out of TV to throw me on the community radio station. "Get Aben on the radio. We've got a tour coming through." I'm like, stop it already. So I graduate. I go into radio, horsed around with that till I got fired. Thank you, God. And I came back to the Detroit area only to return to that same television place, but in a different city with them. And I eventually became their studio coordinator, got nominated for an Emmy for writing television commercials, taught a boatload of people how to do television, how to make their own things, created the first ever local origination show for Weight Watchers International and produced that for 2 years. And then I got lured away by fame and fortune and a studio of my own. And I moved to Monroe, Michigan, where I built and ran their television studio for 4 years. And I left there 20 years ago. The studio is still on the air, run by several of my former students. And they just built, actually, a brand new studio across the hall and included a radio station. So that is kind of how I got here. The unexpurgated version. The one without the gannet. Sorry, I'm too into Monty Python. If you don't know, look it up. It's a funny bit. There you go.
Well, and there is also the threat in your life of doing psychic work. True. So how does that fit also?
Okay. When I was a little girl, I come from a huge family. My parents are both the youngest out of 13 kids, okay?
Yikes.
Yeah, I know. So I've got cousins old enough to be my parents. This is really crazy. And there are 62 of us first cousins. So this is no joke. There's a lot of people in my family. So here we are. I must be 7 or 8 years old at the time. And my mother's brother, Robert, dies. And I'm in a private school in Detroit because of the violence in the city where we lived. My parents put my brother and I in private school in another city. And we get one of the nuns comes in and says, you have to go to your aunt's house after school. Your parents will pick you up there. And I'm thinking, my parents don't own a car. How are my parents going to pick me up? So sure enough, my dad shows up with one of my uncles later and takes us back to the house. And everybody's in the living room crying and crying and crying. My mother says to me, Uncle Bobby's dead. She walks me down the street to the funeral parlor. We are let in. I mean, and he's a mess. I mean, bruises all over his face. He looks like a bus hit him. And this plays a role in the continuing conversation. We get back to the house, and it was the house my mother actually grew up in. My grandmother had already passed. My grandfather was still alive. And we were actually living in that house to help take care of my grandfather. So I go upstairs to my bedroom, and I look outside my window, and there's my uncle, the one I just saw that looked like I got hit by a bus. He's floating out in front of this window and smiling at me, no bruises, no nothing, eyes wide open, like he wasn't just laying in a box. And through his mind, not his mouth moving, he said, they're lying to you, sweetheart. They're lying to you. Well, I just like let loose with a scream like I was getting stuck with a hot poker. And everybody comes flying up the stairs, and I'm standing there screaming, Uncle Bobby, Uncle Bobby, and I'm pointing out the window. Well, honey, and I said, no, he's right there. Yeah, like they believe that because they couldn't see him.
Right.
And we had a hospital right across the street. They went and got some kind of doctor. They gave me a shot. I don't remember much after that. Now, I will tell you that I had all of the different psychic experiences of seeing ghosts the entire time growing up, scared the underwear into balls of wet cotton on me because I didn't want to see ghosts. I didn't want them talking to me. I just wanted everything to leave me alone. And it literally led to me doing crazy things like drug experimentation and starting drinking at age 9 because I figured if they wouldn't go away, I'd go away. And that didn't work either because they stayed. And when I was 30 and I was working in radio up in Marshall where I got fired and ended up coming home, but prior to that, my husband, at the time I was married, and my mother and I were sitting in this restaurant with all the other townsfolk, because Marshall's a very little town in Michigan, and she looks at me and asks me a very personal question to which the answer was none of her business, and she kept pushing and pushing and pushing, so finally I answered her question, and she was just horrified, and I said, hey, wait a minute, now that we're doing truth or dare, and you just embarrassed me in front of everybody I live with in this town, what was that lie? What do you mean, what lie? I said, the lie that you told me when Uncle Bobby died. And she said, no, 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 no. I can't talk about it. I said, oh, yeah, you can. What was the lie? And she said, well, we told you your uncle got hit by a bus. I told you that was going to come into play later in the conversation.
Right.
And I said, yeah. What was the lie? She said, all right. Actually, he jumped out of a fourth floor hotel room into the path of the bus. And he had committed suicide, which back in the 50s and 60s, and even still today, there's such a stigma. And I looked at her and I said, well, why didn't you tell me the truth? And she said, because you were such an honest little child, we were afraid if the neighbors asked, how did your uncle die, you'd just come right out and tell them. Well, the minute she said that, this huge wagon wheel chandelier that was above our heads, now, mind you, we're not near any windows, no doors. We are in an inner table in a big boy restaurant in Marshall, Michigan. This thing started swinging back and forth. And people are grabbing my husband out of the way and me out of the way and my mom out of the way. And I'm laughing. And everybody's looking at me like I'm nuts. And they're like, what's so funny? I said, that's my uncle. I said, he can rest now because she finally fessed up to the lie. The minute I said it, it stopped moving. And they all looked at me. They let go of our chairs and they backed away like 10 feet each. Let go of the little witch girl and everything will be okay. Which is stupid because Marshall, Michigan is one of the most haunted cities in Michigan. that you can actually drive down this one, the main road, and look into the room of this bed and breakfast hotel and see the lady ghost as she walks back and forth in front of the window any time of the day or night. This is no joke. Go to Marshall, Michigan and watch that lady. She's there. But yeah, so that, and then years later, I went into a psychic church, a spiritualist church, and people there, I went because you got free readings at the end of every service. I'm on that, buddy. Save me some money. And I walked into the church and I got like 9 readings. I walked out thinking, hey, that's pretty cool. And they were accurate too, daggone it. Went back the next week and they got to that part of the service where they gave readings. They said, hey, Annette, you got anything to say? Yeah. And I said, well, I'm really enjoying myself. Thank you. And they said, no. Do you have any readings to give? And I said, no, I come here to get readings. I didn't come here to give readings. I don't give readings. And they looked at me like I was nuts. Mm-hmm. So a little while later, couple services later, they asked me, and out of nowhere, I stood up and I turned and looked at this woman, and I don't know what I said to her, but her face turned chalk white, and she couldn't speak, and she dropped her water, and then I said, that's all I have, and I sat down, and after that, you couldn't shut me up, kind of like now. readings just kept coming and coming and coming, and I ended up just doing readings constantly in church, hands-on healing. I made the front section of the local newspaper because I could, you know, heal people with my hands, and oy vey. I mean, it was a ruckus at that point. And then I went to work in a little shop where I had a secretary and people came in to see me. And then I worked on the psychic lines for years. So I've done a lot more readings internationally and over the phone. And I've taught classes and I've studied an awful lot about it. So I can actually work with people on very specific things. And in that time, I became a Reiki master. I became certified Bach flower therapist. I am a certified hypnotherapist with exceedingly excellent results, I might add. I was quite shocked as to how well it worked. And I also studied aromatherapy and a whole bunch of other really cool stuff. So there you go. That's that.
Yeah, that she says offhandedly, that's that. So once again, you have an incredible range of skills and techniques that you've worked on, and you have a lot of experience, but no big deal, right?
You know, David, I'm almost 60 years old. You got to put some living in your life. You know what I'm saying? You know, I really do believe that when you reach certain ages, if you've been given opportunities to do things and you haven't taken them and that's what you want to do, God bless you. No big deal. I'm not judging, but I'm just saying that everything that landed in front of me was an opportunity to have fun. We haven't even talked about the fact that I sang in a band for almost a decade. I mean, come on. Oh, seriously. And that I've, you know, been in a movie and I've done theater. And I mean, I've gotten paid to work in almost every facet of entertainment there is. And I was a runway model at one time. So, you know, come on, David. You reach, opportunity knocks. And for those that don't want to take advantage of opportunities, you know what? Maybe they're happy too. I just kept thinking that if it came to me and I could do it or it challenged me to do it, maybe I should do it and see what happened.
It sounds like an incredible life. We're going to go to a break in just a minute. I want to make sure that everybody knows where to find you. So what's the best way to find you online?
Oh, I was going to say straight up I-275, hang right on Ford Road. And I thought, oh, that isn't what you mean. Like right now,
you're just inviting everybody in the world that listens to this stuff.
Come to my house. Put some Rosie Clooney on. Come out of my house. All right. What would be, I think I'm a DJ again, right? The best way to find me, seriously, is go to Facebook. Everybody and their dog's on Facebook, right? I've even friended Ariel, the family dog, on Facebook, no lie, and Mokomo, the cat. So come on. Everybody's on Facebook. And my public page is Annette, A-N-N-E-T-T-E, Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-E, Aben, A-B-E-N, Communicates. Annette Rochelle Aben Communicates. Friend me there. Like that page. It's great. And my website is AnnetteRochelleAben.wordpress.com. So those are probably the two quickest ways.
Fantastic. So we're going to take a quick break for some really fun public service announcements. And we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. which hasn't happened yet. So my guest is Annette Rochelle Aben here on Empower Radio. This is the Farkas Files, and we will be right back. Don't go nowhere.
Styling your hair every day, and do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Annette Rochelle Aben, who is just a master of all things. What a Renaissance woman, or what?
Or what?
Is there? Or what? Yeah, I would say, is there anything you didn't do? But I'm afraid what your answer would be.
Give a few things. Like I never went to college. Well, I take that back. I was in college for a whole week. And then we realized that the grant I had applied for didn't come through. And when I was facing all these bills, I said, I can't afford that. And they said, well, somebody has to pay it. And I said, not if I leave right now. So I left. After a whole week, I moved into the dorm, took a whole week's of classes, and that was it. So I never graduated from college. So that's something I haven't done.
I wasn't exactly meaning it literally, but
Sorry about that.
But you can continue. I'm sure it'll be equally fascinating.
No, that's all I'm willing to admit to that I haven't done. So.
Ah, okay. So here you are with this expansive background in radio and television, and also and theater and all kinds of other related things, and this broad background in psychic work. And what are you doing now?
I'm writing. I'm a writer. I have to tell you, I think I've been writing since I could hold a pen or a crayon or whatever it was I first held in my grubby little mitts when I was learning how to do that. And it's the one thing that I think my entire life has brought me comfort and solace, escape, entertainment. I got punished a lot when I was a child. I get sent to my room, and all I had there were encyclopedias and paper and pencil. So I'd write. And I had an accident when I was a little girl. I was three, I think. My dad and I seem to remember I was three going on four. And I shattered my right arm. I shattered my elbow. I have no elbow in my right arm. And I'm right-handed. Not anymore. Thanks to that, I'm ambidextrous. So as a result, growing up, part of my therapy was to use my hands and arm as much as possible because they were afraid I would never use it my entire life, the doctors. So I constantly was writing. I was constantly practicing my penmanship and whatever else. And writing just seemed to be very, very natural. And the education I had, we always had to write essays. We always had to write short stories, book reports. And I really enjoyed writing. I enjoyed it a lot. So when I became a sophomore in high school, I got a poem published in the Detroit, it was a literary magazine for young people. I think the Detroit Library System sponsored it. And a poem was published there. And from then on, I went to publish a few other poems here and there. And eventually, my writing took me to the art of writing newsletters for people, which I enjoyed. And we're going to move that all. And then I can't even think about this. I sat down one day, I thought, gosh, I would really like to write for a newspaper again, because in 1994, when the job at the TV studio ended, I started writing for the local newspaper in Monroe County, and they gave me a front page story every week for 52 weeks, but when they wouldn't hire me full time, I left. So that was fun, and I missed it. Then I got hired to write for a digital newspaper called Access Toledo, which I did for 2 years, which I wrote about metaphysical and psychic things. So I taught tarot classes through that thing. I taught astrology classes, anything I could think of to fill up a weekly column. And the editors were just like, let her go. It doesn't matter what she writes. As long as she gives us 200 words every week, who cares? And I had a blast. That ended, and I was like, bored. So I started writing newsletters for people, whether they paid me or not. Hey, you want a newsletter? What? Let me write one for you. And I'd create it, take it to Kinko's, get it copied, pass it out. And then one day, when I found the wonderful world of Facebook, I would start writing things online, little poems, little nighttime inspiration things that I would send out in emails. And a friend of mine said to me one day, why don't you put all that really cool stuff in a book? And I went, yeah, like I can rip it out and stick it in a dictionary. They go, no, seriously, Nat, write a book. And I thought about it. So I published a book called Perspective. It's all about replacing one thought with another. And I really enjoyed it because it really, everything I wrote in there made you think. So if you were thinking in a way that didn't please you, if you read one of these things, you could replace one thought with another. And it had prose and poetry and photographs. Well, then the book went out of, that was in 2009. The book went out of print, and I wrote another book that's on Amazon right now called Choose, the Two-Step Plan. And it's basically, you want to be happy? Here's a step you can do to be happy. You want to choose gratitude? Here's a step you can do to find gratitude. And it is so basic that even children, seven-year-olds, are getting it. So I'm very excited about that. And then a friend of mine who was looking at that book here at my home said, picked up the old copy of Perspective and said, yeah, but why aren't you writing this stuff? You're really good at this. And I took it as a compliment. Thank you, Valerie. So I sat down the next day and I republished that book on Amazon. So they're both there. And then one day in my inbox, from a lovely lady who started a women's empowerment group on Facebook back in 2010, Carla Wynn Hall, private messages me and says, I'm creating a book called Empowered Women of Social Media, 44 Women Who Found Their Voices Through the Power of Social Networking, and I want you to contribute a chapter. I'm thinking, me? I never lost my voice. This is kind of funny. So anyway, long story, I know. I was like, you know, I hate to channel Joan Rivers, but can we talk? I know, Annette, you're doing the talking. It'll work. So I feel like that's what my voice sounds like tonight is Joan Rivers. So I submit a chapter. Now, this book is amazing because there are women from like 23 different states in the United States, all across Canada, four other countries, Australia, Bali, United Kingdom. I apologize to anybody from the group that's listening if I've forgotten, because I should have had notes with me and I didn't. But the book is an opus. It's just incredible. It's going to come out on Kindle on October 5th for 99 cents. So everybody, please, Empowered Women of Social Media, hit the Kindle on that day, get the book. 99 cents is a download you cannot beat. And there'll be a bunch of bonus offers from the different authors. And then we're doing the paperback launch on the 15th for, I don't know what the price is going to be on that yet, but it's going to come out in paperback. So being part of that book has really given me even more drive and more incentive to keep speaking, because really, writing that book helped me find a voice inside of me that I didn't know was what had been talking to me all this time. Everything else I've done in my life, again, no regrets. Even the crazy, stupid mistakes I made and all the wonderful choices I made, they all created the person known as me. And I like me. I'm okay with me. And as you pointed out earlier, I was invited by the founders of the Magic Happens, which is a digital magazine. Please go to themagichappens.com and read the great stuff that David writes and I write and all our other wonderful writers write. And they asked me if I would be one of the editors. And I thought, really? Seriously? One of the greatest experiences of my life. All of this is showing me that what I was meant to do and where I was meant to be was writing. And since the beginning of the year, all I've said was, I'm a best-selling author. I'm a best-selling author. I am published everywhere. I'm a best-selling author, and I'm having a ball. And I have said that. Now, am I a best-selling author? No, not really. However, a book I created back in the 80s for a company I worked for at the time, so it was an in-house publication, won the National Marketing Award for the company, which was United Artists Entertainment, and they printed 250,000 copies, first printing. In anybody's book, folks, 250,000 copies is a bestseller. Right. So technically, no, I'm not a best-selling author, but I'm the author of a best-selling book. And now, with the Empowered Women of Social Media, which is, we are planning the launch on this to become a Kindle bestseller, then I will, by all rights, be able to say, on the morning of October 6th, I am a best-selling author. And I cannot tell you how excited I am about that, how thrilled I am, and honored and humbled all at the same time. Because do you know how many people write books?
Yeah.
A lot. And you know how many people have this same dream? Every blessed one of them. And do you know how many people reach that dream? I heard crickets chirping in the background. Not a lot of them. And I'm going to do that. And I can't tell you how excited. Me and 44 other women, 43 other women, we're going to do that. And that blows my ever-loving mind.
It's very, very exciting. And once you, in quotation marks, make a name for yourself, everything else gets easier to do. It's much easier to do.
I hope so.
Because you have that name. Yeah, it's getting, with self-publishing and some of the tools that you pointed out to me, it's getting so easy to take whatever it is that you've written and actually get it out there with where people can get their hands on it. You know, everybody thought the internet was going to be the printing press for everybody, but I think we're going back actually to printed books, but done as print on demand, and Kindle books so that people can carry them around and read them. So in a lot of ways, we've gone back to a digital printing press, which is very, very exciting.
Yeah, and print on demand, and I'm grateful that you brought that up. This is a huge bonus. Because back in the day, when print-on-demand, yeah, and that was like a couple weeks ago for some people, but seriously, before print-on-demand became as ragingly popular as it is, when you wrote a book, you had to come up with the cash, and they didn't have Indiegogo campaigns back then either, folks. You went to your rich Uncle George or your, you know, spinster Aunt Millie or whomever, and you begged, borrowed, and stole, promised, lied through your teeth to get money to print that book. Then you had to put your shoe leather on, and you had to haul it. And you had to take it every single place you could to sell it to get more money to buy more books. So in the long run, you were still eating cat food with the cat next door because there was no money to do anything but buy more books and sell them again.
Right.
If you were lucky enough to get an agent, they would move the book for you. If you were lucky enough to get a newspaper article that told who you were, you might sold another couple hundred books. But the idea is with print on demand, I don't keep a stock of my books here. If somebody wants my book, they go to my Amazon author page and they order it. And then it is printed and shipped directly from Amazon to their front door, just like it is when I order it, folks. I go and buy it and they ship it to me. And then you have the book. So they only the cost drops radically, and the money that you earn goes up. And I don't know if anybody remembers the movie The Secret. I happen to love the movie The Secret, so I watch it constantly. And in that movie, Jack Canfield, who was one of the creators, he and Victor Mark Hansen of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, talks about how he knew that he wanted to earn this $100,000 in 1 year. And he goes on through the story. No spoiler alert here, guys. The movie's been out a while, so I'm going to give it to you. He talks about the fact that he knew if his book could sell 400,000 copies, he could earn $100,000. Do the math, guys. That means he made a quarter off each book.
Right.
You can do better than any. By the way, the guy got a revenue check for $1 million from the publisher. So what he had to sell really, really worked. But the idea is with print on demand, you actually can make more royalty than that. But you still have to sell the book. You still have to market and promote it. But what they've done with print on demand is they've made it so much easier to get the book created and make it available. And that really is a blessing. That is a huge blessing.
Right, right. And how easy is it to, once people are interested, just send them to the page on Amazon where they can buy it directly. They don't have to go anywhere. They, you know, knowing people who had bookstores locally that failed because of all the changes that are going on, it's a real problem for them. But in terms of authors, it's incredible. It's an amazing thing to be able to say, my book's on Amazon, here's the page. You can buy it now, today. It'll be there in 2 days.
Precisely. And if it's a Kindle copy, it can be there, like the I Dream a Genie, blink, and it shows up.
Right.
I mean, that's
you can have it right now and start reading.
Phenomenal.
Which is just a complete transformation of the relationship between writers, authors, and their readership. Yeah. And the way the money flows. Just, it's incredible stuff.
And it allows you to be very timely. You know, if you want to write a story on something that's so current that people are still talking about it, all right. But the point is, you can, how fast can you type?
Right.
Because as fast as you can type, if you can get that done in 24 hours, it'll take roughly 24 hours. Or CreateSpace is the name of the branch of Amazon that you publish through. So you go to CreateSpace and you upload your file, and they do take up to 24 to 48 hours to approve it. My stuff's come back a lot quicker, but my books are a lot smaller. And then they approve it. They send you a PDF, a file to look at. They do recommend that you order a proof copy. And I'm going to tell everybody right now, get the proof copy, because I edit other people's stuff. This is what I do. And there were things in my book I did not see that were wrong. So when I got my proof copy, I handed it to someone. Go, here, read this for me. look at it. Here's a pen. Mark it up. Tell me what I screwed up on. Tell me, did I spell a word wrong? Is there a comma where there shouldn't be one? Because I didn't see it. And then you go back and redo it. But ideally, you can get your book into the marketplace in 48 hours. Ideally.
Right. Which is just, it used to take months.
Oh, heck yeah.
And you'd have to print out however many copies were the minimum run from the publisher.
Yep.
It's just
total. Which is why
you
see in the books, first printing, second printing, third printing. That's where that comes from.
Right. Right. And then they had to be stored somewhere at a fulfillment house where people would literally take books off the shelf and wrap them up and send them out. And now when somebody orders it from Amazon, if they're ordering the paperback or hardcover book, literally that one book for them gets printed and shipped out. There's no stuff sitting and waiting on the shelf.
Nope, not at all. Which is why your printing costs can go down, and which is why books can be sold for very low prices, relatively speaking.
Right.
Relatively.
It's just, I've watched it all unfold because one of my many past lives in this lifetime was working in computer graphics and mostly fixing other people's files so they actually would run when they sent them out to the printer. And it was the creation of the stuff you gave the printer was complicated. It was not an easy thing to do. And the stuff they did on the physical end at the printers was not easy stuff to do and was time consuming and expensive. And now it's gotten to this incredible one at a time, really fast. It's a totally amazing transformation, and happened really quickly.
And you know, I don't think people realize this, but the Typographers Union, which is what a printer is a typographer, was at one point the second largest union in the world.
Yep.
And not just in the United States, in the world. My ex-husband was when I met him, he was a typographer. He actually set type by hand.
Right.
And they were called pigs. And they were little pieces of metal. And there was a pig for an N and a pig for an O and a pig for a Q. And, you know, in other words, and right around, we got married in 1980. And right around the middle to the end of 1980, his print shop changed over to digital graphics. They actually had to send him to school to learn to do it. And it was amazing the way what they could do and whatever else. And now we actually, just by sending emails and things of that nature, you're technically doing, by choosing your font and the size and the this and the that, you're actually doing what printers do now, what the typographers do now. It's the same technology. And it's right there at our fingertips. Yeah. That blows my mind.
There's a lot of artistry and technical detail that's been lost in the process of making it something that everybody can do. And in high school, I set type, set metal type. So I know all the way from the beginning, and I know what the terms mean and all the rest of it. And back in the day when I was making other people's files work, that was some of the stuff that I would fix. So we've lost some of the artistry of it, some of the beauty of the way that the printed word was printed. But at the same time, we've gained an access to, books are now something that's extremely easy to get out into the world and can be done inexpensively. And it used to be incredibly complicated. So, Win some, lose some.
True. And what I think is really awesome is there is like a return to vinyl records. There are artists that are releasing their entire catalogs on vinyl. And I'm like, oh, yay. Because I like hearing the pop, scratch, scritch, scritch, scritch of a needle across a record sometimes, because it reminds me I'm listening to a record as opposed to the CDs, which just go da-da-da-da-da-da-da when they get stuck in the CD player. Sounds like a Gatling gun. But there actually is a return to the printed book, and I'm grateful for that because I am one of these folks that, like, when I interview people on my radio shows, and I'll say, would you send me your book? And they'll say, I'll just download the ebook. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I don't do that. Number one, I don't want to read, I don't want to be sitting here staring at my computer. And number two, when I'm working in the middle of an interview, I'm flipping back and forth in that book going, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. And right. I like having a book in my hands. So there is an actual return to the printed book. And I'm grateful because my books play better as printed books. And I like having them. So this to me is winner, winner, chicken dinner. I love it. I think it's a great thing.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner, eh?
Well, all right, I'm vegan. Winner, winner, vegetable dinner. How's that?
I'll go with chicken. Whatever
there
works.
There you go. He'll have the chicken, I'll have the vegetables. Thank you.
There we go. So we've obviously covered an incredibly broad range of things because that's who you are and what your life is. But what do you want people to know right now about what you're doing and what you can offer?
Okie dokie. What I would love everybody to remember, first of all, is to check out my author page on Amazon, which is the ubiquitous World Wide Web, www.amazon.com/author, and then the word author, and then put another slash, and then type in my full name, Annette Rochelle Aben, just like it sounds. And it will take you to the page where anything that I am connected to as an author will appear there once it is published. So Choose is there, Perspective is there, and in my bio, I do announce when the Kindle launch for Empowered Women of Social Media will be, which is October 5th, and that it's 99 cents. And on that day, as soon as that book goes live, that book will also appear on my page. So it's the quickest way to get to any of that. And I really hope that everybody has an opportunity to write a book, get it published. If you need help, hit me up on Facebook. Yes, I do charge for it. I wish I could say I could give all my stuff away for free. Doggone it. But they're not taking trade outs at Detroit Edison, so I've got to pay the light bill too and the internet bill. But I don't charge a fortune. So yeah, they can hit me up there. They go to my website, AnnetteRochelleAben.wordpress.com. It tells you all the other stuff I'm doing, my blog talk stuff and everything. So yeah, if that was
fantastic,
to let them know.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show. As always happens with the guests that are the most fun, we just ran out of time and there's still so much to talk about. So you
I know.
Just have
oh, and the magic happens.com. Please go read our digital magazine. David is an absolute genius. You've got to read what he writes. And I'm not paid to say that. He paid me to say everything else, but not that.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome.
I've really enjoyed writing for The Magic Happens, and those essays I've written for The Magic Happens hopefully are going to be my first couple of books now that you've shown me how easy it is to do it. So my guest tonight is Annette Rochelle Aben, the amazing Renaissance woman that we have found out that she is. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
Thank you, David.
It's just been great fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you've gotten at all curious about what in the world this guy David does besides writing for The Magic Happens, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute assessment of a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, to see how my work might be helpful to you. So please take advantage of that. If you're looking for more about the show, that's also hiding in plain view at thefarkasfiles.com. You can listen to, you can actually listen to this show or you can pass it along to somebody, but there's an archive there of however many years I've been doing this. I really should find out. I have no idea anymore. And you can also find us on almost all the streaming media websites, Stitcher, iHeartRadio,
iTunes podcasts and a number of others. Just search for Empower Radio or search for the Farkas Files. And there are lots and lots of ways to plug in and be able to listen to the show. Last thing I heard, the reruns of this show were in the 9 o'clock slot on EmpowerRadio.com every night, with obviously the live show on Thursday evenings. It's very exciting that people listen to us all over the world, and it's great fun. I just got an email from someone in Australia. It was always very exciting. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.